This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are people around you who have done remarkable things for the sake of our freedom. We want to honor our veterans for their service and the sacrifices they've made on our behalf. We want to preserve their stories so we understand just how great a price has been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we get to be educated, entertained, and often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Rear Admiral Dick Lyon of Oceanside, California is our guest today. Folks here in Oceanside remember him as a two-term mayor, but his story goes back a lot deeper than that. And let's start with your days growing up in Pasadena. You're the second in a string of four brothers. What was that like in Pasadena in the 1930s?
Oh, it was great. It was a small town, still a little bit of a small town flavor to Pasadena. And with nothing but boys, we had four boys in the family, and it was great.
You remember some great Rose Bowls from those years?
We lived, our home happened to be on the Arroyo, right above the Rose Bowl. So I saw a lot of football games in the Rose Bowl, and I graduated from high school at Muir Tech High School in the Rose Bowl in 1940. As a freshman, I had just finished winning two CIF, California Interscholastic Federation, gold medals in swimming. I was 13 years old. Jackie Robinson was a senior at Muir Tech High School. You know, and when you finish your workouts for the day, whatever the sport, why everybody's hanging around the locker room, you take the showers together. And Jackie approached me after our workouts, and he said, "Dickie," yeah, that's me. He said, "I have a favor to ask of you." And I said, "Sure, what's going on?" And he said, "I have to tell you, I don't know how to swim." He said, "Obviously, you're swimming pretty well right at this point in your life." He said, "Could you give me a hand and after our workouts, we can get into the pool," which is right there at between the girls' gym, the boys' gym, 25-yard pool, great pool. So we did that. We met in the pool, and I would put my hands under his back and tell him, "Okay, big breath now, Jackie, big breath," and I'd try to slip my hands out from under him. You may have done this with your kids. Yeah. And then right down, and he come blustering back up to the surface. I said, "Okay, let's give it another try, another big breath." Well, we did that for almost 2 weeks, and the Friday of the second week I said, "Okay, ready for your lesson?" He said, "I think we're going to pass up on that." And I said, "Why, what's up?" And he said, "Well, I just don't think that I'm going to be able to make it as far as learning how to swim." He said, "But I have something that I'd like to tell you. I really appreciate what you've done." I mean, this is a senior high school telling a little freshman guy. He said, "I appreciate the help that you've given me." And he said, "It just didn't work out. So here's the deal. You take care of swimming, and I think you're going to go a long way." And he said, "And I will take care of all other sports." And so help me, that was a word for word, that was it. And what an incredible guy. Did he take care of the sports? As you know, he went on to UCLA, and he was just outstanding at UCLA. One of the most exciting broken field runners in football you ever saw.
And of course, a lot of people now only know him because he broke the color barrier, but it sounds like at Muir Tech and certainly at UCLA, there was no understanding of this prejudice or bias, and certainly it sounds like you didn't feel that.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, he's just a good guy, and what an athlete. I figured a real unusual thing that I would have that one-on-one experience with Jackie. Quite a guy, and as I think you may know, that he's the second in his family to achieve some fame. his brother Mack being in the 1936 Olympics, runner-up to Jesse Owens.
Well, and you mentioned the Olympics, and I was curious in hearing your swimming exploits. Was that a dream of yours? Did you think that you could be a Johnny Weissmuller or something?
Well, as a result of the high school swimming and my junior and senior year both, I was ranked nationally number one in both the 50 and 100 freestyle. That afforded me a trip to the Olympic tryouts in 1940, which happened to be in Santa Barbara. And I went up there as a almost graduate high school senior and managed to get through all the preliminaries and into the finals and wound up by being fourth in the 100 meter freestyle. And that assured me of a place on the team and a place on the relay team, which would have been a nice gold medal. Guess what? The games were canceled. And word to have been in Helsinki, and Hitler took care of that. That's the bad news, the games being canceled. The good news, the coach for the United States Olympic swimming team, of course, was there. I was a high school senior. He was also the coach at Yale. And guess where I went to college? The entire time that I was at college, why, we never lost a dual meet. And I had the pleasure of swimming anchor on a 400 freestyle relay, world's record, and was captain of the team that won the NCAA championships. We won those at Yale. We beat Michigan by 1 point and Ohio State by 2.
So you go on to Yale, and I guess that's where you were when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. Do you remember December 7th?
As a matter of fact, I was listening to New York Philharmonic. I remember it's one of those photographic things. We all have those, and I just remember precisely. I can even tell you they were playing Tchaikovsky, Symphony No. 4, New York Philharmonic, on Sunday. And I was doing my studying, and they interrupted the program to say that word had just been passed that the Japanese had attacked our forces in Pearl Harbor. And that's when it broke out. I was a freshman at Yale. As it turns out, I was interviewed along with a couple of other of my swimming pals by the recruiter. We decided that, you know, less than a year later, that, hey, this is not something that's temporary. So we went to the recruiter, three of us. I was an engineering major. They were both in what we called academic at Yale College. One was history and the other was English. And the recruiter says, well, you two, we're taking you right away. As far as you got to stay here because you're an engineer, and we were told to leave the engineers alone. So I majored in metallurgical engineering. That was part of my job while I was there. I was on a scholarship and had a job fill out, and graduated in 2 years and 9 months, straight through, no vacations.
I don't know that too many people have done that, especially at some place like Yale. So then after graduation, what'd you do?
Right after graduation and about a week vacation, I reported in at Midshipman School, Columbia University in New York City. You, as a midshipman, become ultimately an officer and a gentleman in 90 days. And we were known at that time, for all of you senior people that are listening, I am a 90-day wonder. When I graduated, that's what happened for me. But 2 weeks before I graduated, notice on the bulletin board, which read, wanted volunteers for extra hazardous duty involving demolition of explosives. I thought, whoa, that's a new notice. And I looked again, and the fine print under it said, must be strong swimmer. Ah, there you go. And so I volunteered into that particular duty, and I went to Fort Pierce, Florida for training with the United States Navy Special Warfare Scouts and Raiders, and wound up doing a recon in Mindanao, this big southern island in the Philippines, for an amphibious assault, which never happened. I did the recon in August, and 4 days later, the bombs dropped.
Before we get to that, let's talk about the training, because you know better than anyone that the Navy SEALs now in their training, one of the big humps to get over that weeds out some of the guys who can't hack it is what they call Hell Week. Did you guys have something like Hell Week back in 1944?
We not only had it, we formed it. And it's the one thing that's carried on in Navy Special Warfare in a training aspect. Hell Week is part of the training now, which is a 61-week program for trainees down at Coronado, California. So we initiated that program. We had to do it because at that time, the relationship of you to your swimming buddy was number one. And we were told going right in by our instructors, if your buddy, for whatever reason, doesn't make it, neither do you. The last class to go through Scout and Raider training in 1944, we didn't lose a single one. All 57 graduated.
Give us a taste of what that Hell Week was like, because that label makes it seem a little difficult and intensive and intimidating. What was the toughest part of it for you?
Well, it's gotten tougher and tougher and tougher ever since then, but I'm not about to tell any of the ones going through it now. You know, my words to those young men that are going through the training now, well, it's a piece of cake compared to when I went through it in 1944.
Well, I think they probably do have a little more sophisticated equipment now.
Pretty much the same. A lot of physical stress where the emphasis comes down to really one thing, and that is determination. And mentally, you have to be there with regard to determination that you are going to become a Navy SEAL. Class 302, and I'm mentoring, as I think you know, Paul, where I'm mentoring in class 302. We started out on in-doc day, first day of training, with 170 young men who figured they were going to be Navy SEALs. 7 weeks later, I shook hands with those who completed Hell Week, but I only shook hands with 40.
Well, you talk about the cream of the crop. This is serious stuff. I know that was a long time ago, but was there any aspect of your training that you questioned whether or not you would have the determination or the stamina or the endurance or just the physical ability to get through it?
Absolutely, because I went through it again second time. I was in class two for underwater demolition training.
Right.
Again, shortened significantly because of the fact that the Korean War was on at that time. I had to give up my educational pursuits at Stanford, where I was going for my MBA, and put in 2 years as a member of Underwater Demolition Team 5. Again, we had Hell Week. It was significantly more difficult than nearly every aspect of the training we had in Fort Pierce, Florida. One thing at Fort Pierce, Florida, we all kind of remembered is that part of the training is operating surreptitiously. And that meant hunkering right down to the best possible spot you can find where you won't be discovered. And Fort Pierce, Florida, when you get off of the beaten path and into the quote-unquote surrounding territory, sand fleas. We don't have them out here. Boy, I got to tell you, they all live in Fort Pierce, and they were waiting for us in 1944. To me, the thing that I recall is during Hell Week is trying to absolutely not move, and you could feel those little suckers just crawling all over me and something else.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's envying you in that position. Sounds hellish enough to me. It's break time on Hometown Heroes. When we come back, more from 90-year-old Dick Lyon. What kind of equipment did the Scouts and Raiders, predecessors of the Navy SEALs, have back in World War II? We'll find out as we explore his recon missions then and the rest of his trailblazing Navy career when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this. You know, one of the things I appreciate so much about the veterans we meet on Hometown Heroes is that they're real. A sincere and genuine spirit really makes an impression on me, and that's why I'm such a big fan of Educational Employees Credit Union. It was EECU that spearheaded the launch of Central Valley Honor Flight with an initial donation of close to $25,000, and the giving did not end there. More than 200,000 members know EECU represents smarter banking, but it's not just about being smart, it's about the heart. I've worked with the folks at EECU for years, and I've watched them put their money where their mouth is, supporting their credit union members right where they live in hometowns up and down Central California. From sponsoring first-class Educator of the Year ceremonies to taking the lead in sending World War II veterans on an unforgettable journey, my friends at EECU keep proving that you are at the heart of everything they do. Go to myeecu.org to see what EECU can do for you, or just walk into any branch. And while you're there, if you enjoy this show, tell them thanks for supporting Hometown Heroes.